Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Hostikundel, the Connor Roberts playing on the wing of the podcast, and just like Connor, my moustache is very much on point. And I'm joined by the junior Firpo dodgy back pass of the podcast. Let's hope this man can recover from a mistake just like I did. And just as in much style as Junior, it's Martin Riley. Martin, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I've had a decent enough weekend. I've enjoyed watching Leeds and watched them back. I've had a nice takeaway for tea tonight. It was Mother's Day, so I treated the missus to a takeaway for Mother's Day. So I had a nice chicken burger and chips, which was, it was okay. It wasn't amazing, but it was good enough. How are you?
Yeah, I've had a chillish weekend. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm quite a busy man in my life with uni and of the age of where all my friends are getting married and having stag parties and stuff. So it's just, and obviously I've got two jobs as well. So it's just always busy. But otherwise I'm okay. This has been one of my chiller weekends, to be fair. So I've dropped Glenn off at the X's today and then got home and made myself steak and chips for tea. So, but I still haven't quite got down cooking steak, I'll be honest. Like, I'm not very good at it. And, you know, we've got the gangster in the Discord who cooks steak every week and makes it look absolutely fantastic. And I am, and people join the Discord just for that, honestly. He has steak and cheese every week and it looks amazing. I aimed for medium rare and I more did it medium well done. Not ideal. Still practicing to go. Still some practicing to go for me on that sense. We're not here to discuss food and steak and all that. I'm the gangster. We love the gangster though. We're here to discuss the 2-0 victory over Sheffield Wednesday. I don't think there's any news. So
no, I don't think so.
So without further ado, very early on, I will go straight into the game summary. Leeds started the game with their usual 4-2-3-1 formation, with Sheffield Wednesday going with a 5-4-1 formation. Throughout the first half, Leeds had a greater share of possession, with Wednesday looking to threaten on transition from set pieces. Wednesday had the best chances of the opening 20 minutes, generating 0.51 XG, 0.47 of which came from corners. However, they failed to create any more chances for the remainder of that half. Leeds continued applying pressure late in the half, and we started to see a direct approach beginning to pay off, with chances for Rutter and Nonto created by passes from Ampadu and Rodon respectively, but it was Firpo who in the 5th minute of added time sent a deep cross for Patrick Bamford to make it 1-0. During the second half, both sides had spells of possession and got into good territory. However, it was another direct bit of play in the 58th minute when Rutter slid Nonto through on goal after a long ball from Mellier was flicked on by Bamford, leaving the Italian finishing well past Beadle. Wednesday had some good late territory, creating very little in actual opportunities though, and ultimately weren't able to pull a goal back, and the game ended 2-0. And this is now no loss in the league in 12 games or 2024, and still no goals conceded from open play in that run for Leeds United. So straight into the interrogation. In the first half, we were frustrated by Wednesday quite a bit. And what do you think was their out-of-possession game plan, Martin?
So yeah, it was an interesting game plan from Wednesday. They kind of sat in a sort of a mid-block with some moments of aggressive high pressing run into certain parts where they felt that we were exposed. But largely it was a mid-block which looked to compact the space in the midfield area and just tried to cut off passing lanes into the forward areas. And it was very effective in that it did stop us from creating chances. And there was a spell, a good 20-minute spell nearly where we didn't really create anything. But other than, I think, an early chance which we had, which we could maybe done better with. But then for a good chunk of the game, we didn't really create much. And it took us a while to try to manoeuvre our way out of what their strategy was out of possession. And it was quite well disciplined in that the players weren't jumping on us when we were passing it out patiently from the back. And they were doing a really good job of it. And I would say it's different to what I was expecting. And I know that Benny Royal has had some games where he's been a bit aggressive and some games where he's sat back a bit. So it seems like when they do have a good out-of-possession coach on their hands with Royal and one who's quite well respected in the game. So I think that they did a really good job with what they did. But as we'll come on to in the next stage, it didn't work for long enough, really, and we were able to manoeuvre our way out of it.
Yeah, I think, like you said, their mid-block was really well-structured and when they did press, I felt like when we were in deep build-up, they tried to press a bit higher and they had quite a high defensive line, and we'll get onto that. And, you know, it was more of like a 3-4-3 kind of press in there. And then once we got to the halfway line was when they dropped into that really good 5-4-1 structure of that mid-block and kept it really compact and stopped us from playing through the middle from when we progressed a little bit further. And some things which I saw are from that kind of, because Roll is from the Red Bull school, or has been, someone said that he's from the Red Bull school. I think he's done a bit there. You know, we saw that kind of the wingers positioning themselves in a position so that if the ball is won, they can make that break quickly. So that was quite interesting that they were really good at choosing when to be in that position and when to be in that mid block. But I guess the big question for this is, did we make any changes then to how we usually play in possession to counter that strategy from them?
Yeah, we really did. We went more direct. It wasn't really all of our players who were going direct. It was mainly Ivan Ampadu, who attempted quite a lot of long balls in this game. He attempted over 20, I'll just get the exact numbers up here. He attempted 20, exactly, actually. So he attempted 20 long passes during this game. 16 of those were accurate, so a really high success rate for that many long passes, really, 80% in total, which is really good to see. So that was the main way we were bypassing it, like you mentioned, being quite a high line along with that mid-block, which meant that when players were making runs beyond it, it was profitable for us to do that. And so there was a number of runs being made by Bamford and by Routere, and it was really good that was happening. It wasn't just Bamford who was making them, it was more than one. So it's their players guessing as to when those runs would come. And that's why we were able to bypass it. And I believe both of our goals came from more direct play, which is quite unusual for us. At least not when it's obviously the main time when we do go direct is when it's in transitional moments. But these were in generally consolidated possession where we were trying these longer balls and did do a good job of breaking through the out-of-possession approach that Wednesday were going for. And that it ultimately was what won us the game, really. So it's great that we've got this sort of variance to our usual to try to overcome these deeper sides. And it's something that we have talked about before on this pod, that sometimes we aren't going direct enough to bypass teams when they are sitting in a well-structured approach. Thinking of the games against West Brom, and that was one where we particularly spoke about it a lot, that we weren't going direct enough. And if we were able to notice that, and obviously the analysts at Leeds were able to notice that as well. So it's clear that there has been some feedback given and saying to go more direct in these sort of situations, as it will help unlock sides for us, and it worked on this occasion very well.
Yeah, the percentage of long passes for this game is 13%, which is about 3% above what we usually do. I think we're usually averaging around about 9-10%.
That's right.
Yeah, and so I think that was clearly something which, and like we've said before, it comes with having Bamford, and like you said, Routere made some good runs as well and did did the job well. But I think when you've got two, that makes it so much more difficult. But if you've only got one player doing that, then it's a bit easier to handle for the opposition, which is why having Bamford and Routier being able to make those sort of stretching runs quite an aid. And like I said in the summary, we saw that the two goals that we scored came from being direct. Sorry, no, we saw quite a few chances come from B direct. So we had the Routier one where Beadle made that really good save, and then there was that block which followed that. Nanto had a couple, and then obviously the goal itself, the second goal itself, was direct up into Bamford, and Routier had stretched the defence a bit more than where Bamford was, and Nanto managed to run into a space, having Bamford dragged a defender. So yeah, I think it's good that we've got that in our locker as an outlet, as well as just kind of using possession and trying to tie teams down, like what we have seen. But we don't often talk about intangibles. So if we were to talk about the first goal, do we believe that it had an impact on Wednesday, that goal being scored so far into added time in the first half?
I think you definitely have to say that it did, because I think Wednesday would have been quite pleased with the way they had limited us throughout most of the first half. And that really did, I think, catch them by surprise. And going into the second half, you could see that some of their players were a bit more rash than maybe they were in the first half. So I think it may have had some sort of psychological effect on them to have provoke a mini head loss, to use that term. So yeah, that, I do think it was a very good time for us to score. And it's often said in punditry that it's the best time to score, especially when it's been sitting at 0-0 for a while and you suddenly get that goal. Because I wouldn't say it came against the run of play, but we hadn't created any other big chances, and then that one came along.
No.
With a very good ball as well, as we said, from Junior Firpo. Yeah, it was a very good time to score, and it really did set them out, and I'm sure that they will have been gutted by that, because they did have a good first half, and they'll probably have been really annoyed that it came when it did. I'm not sure what you think to it.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's hard to tell because of game state. Because you don't know if that would have been the way that they came out in the second half, where they were then chasing the game. You don't know if we score that goal on 30 minutes, if that last 15 is going to be like that as well. If it's instantly going to be just how they change when that 1-0 happens, or if it is because it happened right before half time. Yeah, so it's a really hard one to gauge, really. I think that the longer, as soon as we scored that second, or in fact just before the second, so the longer it went after the first half where they hadn't had a chance or a sniff to get back into it, we did start to see frustration creep in. It was kind of like that, how were we able to create chances early and we can't now, and they started snapping into tackles a bit more. Like the free kick from where we got the second goal is just really, it's really good from Gray to win the free kick, but it's really poor from the Sheffield Wednesday player who gives it away, right? It's just a stupid free kick to give away. He doesn't need to push him. He doesn't need to do that. He can just kind of let the ball roll out, let it arch out, try and kick the ball against Gray or something like that. Let Gray try and kick it against him. But he decides to make that foul going in a bit aggressively, and that's just that frustration, I think. But I think that was more as in a reaction to losing rather than going down just before half-time. That, like I said, I think it's just too hard to tell.
That's totally fair.
So apart from the scoreline, the other thing that considerably changed from the first half in the second half was our possession. So in the first half, we had 66%. In the second half, this dropped to 54%. What, Martin, do you think was the cause of this?
So I think it was a lot down to Wednesday's out of possession approach. As we've already mentioned in the first half, it was mainly kind of a mid-block, but they did get quite a lot more aggressive as the second half wore on. So initially they were sitting in the mid-block to start with, but then in the opening 10 minutes, it just slowly got that bit more aggressive. And then after the second goal happened, it got even more so. So points after the second goal, every single one of their players was committing to their forward press besides the back four that it was at that point. So you had a good six players who were committing to the press, which did put us under pressure, and they had a number of high turnovers caused by this, and they were able to pin us in at brief moments, and had a couple of phases where they kept hold of the ball more than us. There was one, I think, about 5 minutes before we scored, and then there was also another one about 10 minutes after we scored. So it was couple of phases which brought down our overall possession share because they were redundant to us going ahead more aggressively. So quite game state reasons really was the cause for it, and it's quite natural that a team will look to be more aggressive when they have gone a goal down. And I think the reason why they didn't do this from the start was probably because it left them more exposed. In the second half, we did have more dangerous chances, and even besides the goal, there was another really big chance from Somerville, which Beadle did really well to keep out. That was just a fantastic, fantastic save. Just, it was even more impressive after I looked at the data behind it. I mean, already the chance itself per XG was 0.63, so that's a massive chance. It means like two-thirds of the time the player will score it roughly. But because of how Somerville struck it, it turned that 0.63 chance into a 0.95 chance per post-shot XG. So that's like 95 times out of 100 kind of territory. So he just did really well in that moment. Did Beadle just to make himself big, make Somerville make the decision. Somerville did nothing wrong at all. And he could easily have scored from, and many other goalkeepers in the league wouldn't have done the right thing in that moment that Beadle did. It's such great decision making by a player who's quite young, really. I think he's
18.
Yeah. So he's really young. So he's mental that he's performing as well as what he is. But he's from Brighton, so they know what they're doing with young players.
But like Brighton have two goalkeepers on loan in this league that we like the look of.
Hmm.
There's Rushworth at Swansea, and there's Beadle at Sheffield Wednesday. I think. The thing for me wasn't just, you know, I think a lot of keepers might make that right decision and might time it right. I think what a lot of goalkeepers might lack is the speed to be able to actually get down to that position and make that save from that close a distance as well. With the way that you did anyway, I think the way that you're probably going to see a keeper usually go for that is to spread themselves and try and just make themselves big.
Yeah.
But he's managed to get down and parry that away. So yeah, he's not just made the right decision, he's executed it fantastically. So yeah, to be able to have that agility is something very good to look forward to, and hopefully he's quite a slight keeper. So there's potential that if he needs to bulk up, he might lose some of that agility, but hopefully for him not. But I don't really care right now. I'm talking too much about a Sheffield Wednesday player. and a Brighton player. But in the so we were talking about the drop in possession. I think that my initial thought was that we just went a little bit more direct. But like you said, we were probably forced to by the way that Sheffield Wednesday came at us. I said that we were quite direct in this game compared to what we usually are. So anyway, moving on. This was another game where we didn't concede many chances from open play. We only allowed 0.37 XG from open play, and so far this season we've only allowed 20.72 from open play and only conceded 18 goals, which leads to an overperformance of just about 3 goals, 2.72 to be precise. Do we think this is a concern of our overperformance of concessions of goals?
It's definitely something which has to be considered, and I wouldn't say I'm worried about it. There's a couple of other teams who are up the top end of the division who have got a similar thing going on. Leicester as well are a team who are currently overperforming in this sort of sphere as well. I think it's around 4 goals that they're overperforming, so they should have conceded 4 more. We should have conceded nearly 3. So, and I think another one is, I think it was West Brom off the top of my head. I looked at it earlier, but I didn't write down the numbers. That's poor of me. But yeah, there is a few teams around this area who are overperforming when it comes to allowing goals. So it's not something which concerns me massively. I think it's because at the moment we've got a goalkeeper who is in form, and that's really helping things. Last few games, probably past 4 or 5 games now, I think Melier has been on a really upwards turn in terms of his decision making, and actually the way he's making the, not just making the decision but also enacting the decision is going really well for him, and that's often leading to good things for us. And it's also just the fact that even though we're not conceding very many XG from open play, also the XG that we do concede is generally quite low value. So it's not like we're conceding one high value chance and a couple of low value ones. It's generally about 4 or 5 low value ones. So that makes it even better. So because it's one thing to overperform if you concede one total XG and it's from 20 shots, say, then if you're overperforming, then that one XG has come from 3 shots. If you see what I mean. feel like I'm explaining this badly.
Yeah, it's that context. Yeah, no, it's the context of where the XG comes from, right? And that's kind of what some people have a gripe with XG. You know, it's not a very good measure of how many goals you should have conceded. It is simply a accumulation of the value of how likely that goal was to go in. Is XG. But yeah, I think for me, we've got to give some credit to Meslier. If, you know, we were talking at the start of the season, and I'm talking before the season started, and there were people doing some reviews of like Meslier's goalkeeping numbers. There's still been some reviews of Meslier's goalkeeping numbers, and his underperformance in that. So for example, what I'm talking about is this was kind of flipped, wasn't it? If we'd conceded 20.72 XG, we'd probably have conceded 24 goals. Or 24 goals, let's call it. And that would have been something which, if that was the case at this point and we were in the exact same position, let's say we're in the exact same position, we're second, we're a point off Leicester or 2 points off Leicester, can't remember exactly which one it is, and we were in that state right now, there would be some fans, I reckon, out there kind of using this as a stick to say we would be top if we had a better goalkeeper. And I think that what we're seeing now is that we have a goalkeeper that probably is just keeping us, like you said, if Leicester's is four, an overperformance of four, and they're number one, and we've got an overperformance of three and we're number two, I'm happy to take that right now and just say we're exactly where we should be. Yeah, I think, like you said, Meslier's made some really good saves. He made a fantastic save, the one which I mentioned in the summary from the corner and point blank on Friday night. And yeah, I think the one thing that I've always had an issue with Meslier's shot stopping regarding his choices has always been the ones that have been quite close to him. He often tries to go with his hands and get down to it rather than just try and make the save with his feet, which I think is still a viable shot stopping action. And it's understanding your height of your body and stuff like that. And I understand there's a bit more control with your hands and stuff, but I think that that's always been my concern. That if you hit it low and hard to just the side of him, you're likely to get close to scoring. You've got more chance probably against Meslier. But I think recently he's improved in that aspect.
Yeah, exactly. And so I've looked up the numbers again just so I can get the exact figures what I was talking about. So this is all open play XG just before I go into it. So like we've said, ours was 20.72, which we've conceded, and 18 goals came from that. Leicester have conceded 22.88 and only conceded 18 goals. So it's nearly a 5-goal overperformance from them. And then West Brom, 25.26 XG and conceded 21 goals. So they've got a good 4-goal swing there. And Ipswich kind of go the other way. Ipswich have got 25.82 and have conceded 33 goals from that. So it's considerably an underperformance from their goalkeeper. And I don't even want to say how bad Southampton's is, Christ. But I will. 27.88 they've let in XG-wise, and they've conceded 36 goals from that, so they're a good 8 goals more than what they should have done. So their goalkeeper, Bazunu, I believe.
Like, I'm not being... I don't want to bash goalkeepers, because it is a tough job. I used to be a goalkeeper. It's a very tough job. But Bazunu has had those stats for last season in the Premier League, and there's been no improvement in the division below. It's not been a case of, you know, the skill level difference.
Elite strikers, yeah.
Yeah, he's clearly not a very good shot stopper. I think he's quite good with his feet, and I think that's why he's still being kept on. But I do think if Southampton do go up, they probably need a new keeper. But Bazunu's also only young.
I think it's similar. Back to Meslier. Yeah, I think they're a similar age, right? I think.
I think there's only a couple of years. I think he's 22. Is Bazunu 22, 23? I think he's a little bit younger. A
little bit, yeah.
But I could be wrong. But anyway, that's enough of talking about opposition goalkeepers. I've done a lot of it tonight. I've talked about Sheffield Wednesdays. I've spoken about Southamptons. So I think that's a good time for a break. So before we move on to the second half, we will plug the Patreon, because otherwise Tom Alderson will, I don't know, he'll cement my doorway and not let me out of the house. So, yeah, our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. And if you want to find out more about our Patreon, then please visit Martin.
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Perfect.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And now let's get back to the analysis. This side is going to be less about tactics and more on players specifically. So first up, Glenn from the Discord asked, what did we make of Somerville's performance? Martin?
I thought he had a better game in this one than the past couple. He got very unlucky to not score, for one, like I've already mentioned. I'm not going to speak more about the save. We've spoken enough about goalkeepers today, which I'm sure Warren Driver will be happy about anyway. He loves a good goalkeeper chat. But even just besides that, he was very good in this game at combining with the players down that left flank, and they had a nice little trio going on with him, Camara and Firpo, and they were all combining very nicely on that flank and led to a lot of good chances. I can't remember the exact ones, but there was a few where he just sort of laid it down for Firpo, and then Firpo got a gain. I think that was quite an often seen thing, was Somerville nipping the ball down for Firpo to get on the overlap, and it was just working really well, and that a lot of our chances came from that kind of thing. So yeah, I felt he did better in this game. And it was unlucky to go.
Yeah, I think he just looks to me, I still think he's playing well. I just think he looks a little tired, and I'm not surprised after 4 games in 9 days.
Yeah.
I just think he's kind of, you see his decision making happening, but he just doesn't look as sharp as it did. So kind of like everything's taking like that extra quarter second maybe to happen for him. So yeah, I think he'll be, all being well, touch wood, he'll be good for Millwall, and we'll see like a really good performance from him from Millwall, like we expect. But because I think we've said it before, he set his bar so high that now when he doesn't quite hit that bar, he's kind of like been a failure to. He's kind of been, I can't remember the term, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
He set his bar so high that when he doesn't quite get there, we take it as a bad performance when it's still a good performance. So that's where I felt like he was. It was also really interesting, as I mentioned in the first half, with regards to direct passing, I took a look at the pass maps for the game in the first half and the second half to see if there was a distinct difference in directness and long passing in between the halves regarding possession. What was weird was that it looked like in the second half we actually had more concerted possession inside Sheffield Wednesday's half. But what was evident from both was that we really targeted Somerville's side a lot and didn't really use Nonto much. So we're really favouring that left-hand side still, which I think we've said has been, I remember us talking about it early on, that we felt like that was maybe a little bit of a issue, that we couldn't get that balance right. So I know that this is kind of like a bit of a curveball from that, but do you think that that's still an issue? Are we still trying to use Somerville too much, or does the way that we build up on that side mean that when we do use Yonto, he's a bit more effective because we've used the left-hand side so much, so like they're expecting the left-hand side attack again and we've gone to Yonto?
Yeah, I do agree that we are overusing the left side, and we do need to show more variance in how we're trying to attack, because a lot of effective attacks came from the right side in this game. I remember quite a few moments where Grey and Nonto were combining really nicely, and especially Grey was making some really nice inverted runs into the half space, and they were linking up really, really well on that side. And as good as the left side was working at times, maybe we were just forcing it a little bit too much down that flank, and we should maybe try to vary up it. And the problem wasn't as much of an issue in the first half, I felt. I think we did use the right side more in the first half, but then just the later in the game it went, it would have just seemed to...
There's a massive drop-off.
Yeah.
There's a massive drop-off in the second half of right-hand side.
Yeah.
It's really noticeable in the second half of how much we go down the left.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that tells out, and that's good. I'm not sure why it kind of just happens. I think it was positive that Somerville is kind of like our go-to man, and it just seems like by automatisms we just go for him straight away without looking in other directions. And it still worked, because in this game Nonto was very effective. Even besides the goal, he had a good game. I just want to say one thing about Somerville, though, that despite his in-possession work maybe going down a little bit, his out-of-possession work, if anything, has got better recently. And he's been really effective in giving support down that side to Firpo. So I just want to shout him out for that part of it, that his out-of-possession game is coming along really nicely. And the same can be said for Nonto. There's a few moments in this game where they attacked quickly on Nonto's side, and Gray had been sucked in and was more central than maybe we would have preferred. And their wing back was making like an outside run, and Nonto tracked them well and blocked crosses and stuff like that. So it's just good to see that, as well as the in-possession stuff being good, the out-possession is keeping pace with that, and they're both doing well out-possession. And it kind of takes away a little bit of the upside, which like Dan James has over Nonto, because I think his out-possession work has come along quite a lot. So yeah, just that little thing there to add.
Yeah, definitely. I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago on, I think it was when Nonto first came back into the squad after Dan James, and I just thought like his out-of-possession work had really improved, and it's been evident that that's something he's worked on over the past year, probably. Like you said, he's really making the state of, yeah, I want to be in front of Dan James. We have another question from the Discord, this time from Geo Wade. He says, I do get frustrated by the often conservative approach, passing backwards if in doubt. He then puts in brackets, I am a dar, which tickled me when I saw it. He asked, is there any evidence in the stats of how this approach helps us to win games in terms of opposition drop-off through chasing the ball, affecting the shape of the opposition, or any other insight?
I don't really have any advanced stats to talk about. However, the fact that we're unbeaten in 2024, that kind of lends quite well that it is a successful approach. But it is generally a tactic which a lot of elite managers use, is to recycle possession when things aren't working in one thing, and just to wait for a right moment. And I think, especially in this game, we were more direct, like we've already mentioned, than we have been. And so we aren't just always passing backwards and being conservative, like this question says. We have been doing quite a bit of varied things recently, and I'm happy with that. Sometimes you are right, the passing it along slowly around the back line can sometimes be ineffective when a more direct ball would work. So I'm glad that this has changed and that we are doing it a bit more in certain games, because in general I am quite happy with the possessional approach, especially considering what we've experienced on the Jesse Marsh over the past 18 months before this. So yeah, I'm quite pleased that we are looking to possess the ball more, but also very happy that we are able to adapt and score more direct where the game will call for it.
Yeah, I think for me, the big stat that we can go on this for is that you've got two teams in the top two now who are possession-based and do this. I mean, I think Leicester have had, I think their fans have really got annoyed recently regarding the amount of kind of recycling that they do and safe possession in quote unquote. But we're also, you know, we're the team with the second best goal difference. We've got the second most wins in the league. We have conceded the least amount of goals. So, and that doesn't just, like, conceding goals doesn't just come from out of possession, because the less amount of time that I know that there's the mantra of, you know, it's what you do with the ball when you've got it. And so some teams like to have less amount of possession and then try and be more effective with it. But by limiting teams' ability to be on the ball, we're limiting them creating chances.
Yep.
And that's clearly a big thing and has helped us. The other thing with regards to kind of passing in and around that area, there is obviously that risk of that you're using the goalkeeper, you're going back and playing it out. And so the other thing is that Bamford was speaking to Joe Wilkinson on his pod recently, and he was talking about the high risk, high reward of passing around the back. And he kind of said, obviously, you pass it to the goalkeeper and you've got that risk of giving it away, and of course. But if you've pulled out the... if you've pulled out the attack the way that you want to and you get past that first line of press, you've got the whole of the pitch basically to attack in with less defenders. And then just as a final one, we all love Bielsa and his football, and one of the most revered goals that we share is the Pablo Hernandez goal versus Stoke when there was no fans. And one thing which I think, and I think that one's revered because it's like 26 passes or something like that. But what people don't usually notice there is that we go to make an attack early. Ayling bombs down. We go to make an attack. It's not actually on. We go back. We recycle it through our defenders. And then it is on. And we go. And we cut back. And Pablo scores. And that is what this is, really. It's just that we're probably a little less dynamic in those forward darting movements on the side. But that's just... it just is what it is. Every manager's not exactly the same. I've spoke about Ayling. Speak about a fullback that is still with us. How did you rate Junior Firpo's performance in the game, and how do you think he's been doing recently?
I think in general, recently, he's been a very top performer, and he's been doing a lot of things that I've really liked. He's the only real player on the left side who will look to effectively overlap and get to the byline and put balls in, which is something that obviously we do love to see because it's a big part of what the Elsa ball is all about, and generate a lot of chances in that sort of way. And it's good to see we've got at least one player who is making those sort of movements. And I think a lot was made of the bad back pass, which we alluded to during this game. And I think that clouded people into thinking that Firpo had a really bad game in the first half. But it just wasn't the case. After rewatching, he, other than that one moment, which was bad, I'm not going to say it wasn't, he didn't really do too much else wrong. But he may have got beaten once by one of our wingers, which is going to happen.
I think it happened really early on, kind of like the first 2 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, he had a very strong game in this. He had, I think, he won 4 out of 7 of the take-on attempts with players trying to get by him, which is a very, very strong number, so more than 50%, about 60%. And he generally was just very effective in linking up with the players along that side. He did a lot of good things, which I liked, even one where it wasn't really strictly someone trying to get past him, but he was just sort of positioning his body well to stop them getting into areas. He's been doing that for the past few games, using his body well to stop players rather than lunging in to make a challenge and failing. That was often a thing which we saw from him time and time again, right, where he would just cop down a player who was clearly going past him, but he's not seen to do that as often. I realise, obviously, the standard of attackers in this league is nowhere near the level of where it is in the Premier League, so that is definitely at play here. But I think we should be very happy with the way that Junior's performing, and it's good that he's been available for as long as what he has. I've probably just spoken Firpo injury into existence now, so I do apologise if that happens. But yeah, I'm just very happy with the way he's performing, and it's been pretty consistent for a while now. So long may it continue is all I will say. He's a man with a fantastic moustache, and we all appreciate a good moustache.
That is very true. Yeah, I think I echo what you're saying. We miss a left footer on the left side as a whole. I think when we have Byram and Somerville, we really miss it. If we had a left winger who could be on that side and go to the byline with Byram on the inside, or as we've seen Jadon Anthony play left wing back in the past few weeks, you know, we've just felt really stifled with our options in attack. But on the other side, Will N has asked Roberts, Gray, James, Nyonto, what's our best right side for different situations? It's a very loaded question, actually, that.
It is. There's a lot of things to consider in this, because it's not just talking about the fullbacks, it's also talking about the wingers and the dynamics at play between them. So Yeah, this is a pretty tough question, but it's obviously there's benefits to both a few different combinations of this. So obviously you've got the Welsh connection, having James and Roberts, which is one that we've seen has been quite effective, especially in the game in recent games where they've come on late and it's been very effective. So yeah, that one that absolutely can, because you've got the play of James being quite orientated towards being a out and out winger and being wide more often. But then you've got the reverse of that with Nonta, who is definitely more of an interior winger and to affect play from inside and does a lot of combining, and that generally forces whichever fullback he's with to occupy wider areas more often. But I'd think generally whichever option we use for, at the moment, they're all working very effectively. I've liked what I've seen from Roberts where he's come in instead of Gray. I don't expect we'll see it too often, because we all know that Emil Fagger loves Archie Gray, and who wouldn't? So I think probably that whatever combination we use is going to work well for us, and it's probably more of a topic for future when we get to the Premier League and how this will sort of change and what sort of situation we could end up looking at, because there could be different people at play when we get to the Premier League. For instance, we could well see Georgie Rutter moving out to the wing, which is the development which I expect to happen. But we'll see what the future brings for that. But overall, without going into too much detail, I would say that I'm happy whichever way it is. And possibly the only difference would be if you want more of a wide threat, you would go with James with whichever combination of the fullback you prefer. Both fullbacks we've got are capable of being wide as well as interior.
Yeah, you basically, that last point was exactly what I was about to say. that Roberts can do the interior stuff and he can do the wide stuff. Is there anyone else that you want to talk about from this game, Martin?
Glenn Kamara, again, I think he had an absolutely superb game. So even more highlighted on the rewatch. He was at the heart of everything good that we were doing. He just was progressing the ball forward. He was winning duels. He was just very effective in everything that he did. He had the most progressive passes on pitch in this game. So I was very happy with that. I love a good progressive pass set. And just in general,
we are the progressive pass brigade.
yes, we are. I'm just very happy with the way Kamara is playing at the moment. And I also just wanted to speak a little bit about Ilya Gruev as well. So Gruev, as we now know, is the correct pronunciation. I think a lot of people have said that he's had a bad game recently, and he has, especially in possession. But I just wanted to highlight in this game that he was very good out of possession. He got through a lot of work in this game and was our most productive out of possession player. He had 8 combined tackles and interceptions in this game. And the guy who was combined, the one who was joint first with him, was Junior Firpo. So both those two guys got through a lot of out-of-possession work. Just for example, the closest to come to those was Nonto and Kamara, who both had 3 combined tackles and interceptions. So yeah, although he may have not been as effective as we'd like to him to be in possession, although I still wonder about him in possession, whether his role was maybe been given to be just the player who recycles the ball back and forth, and his role is to keep things simple. That's what I wonder at the moment, because it is seemed that his passes are generally not very ambitious, and those being left to other people, I think. I'm not sure. We don't get told what the tactical instructions are, but that's just my guess on why Groove's played in the way that he is. But out of possession, I've been happy with him. Not sure if anyone else stood out for you, for good or bad.
I'm going to right now make an apology to Ampadu, who in the admin chat I thought he was having a poor game. I did say that it was more down to the fact that I feel like he looks very tired, and I think that's Gruev's possible issue as well. Like, I think he's just looking exhausted. I think a lot of the players are, and so we've done really well to get out of this run from that. But yeah, on the watch back, I was like, yeah, Ampadu was really good. And I think my issue is what I've seen is when I was watching the game on Friday, I was zoning in and out a little bit. And every time I zoned in, it was something that I didn't like that I saw Ampadu do, basically. I think like his yellow card and stuff like that. And I was just like, well, that was poor. What's he doing? Sort of thing. And it kind of just confirmed he's had a drop off in performance due to him being tired. It was like a confirmation bias. And I owned up to that in the admin chat as well, to be fair. And again, I think that's probably me setting Ampadu's expectations of his performance really high, and really, like, when he still has a good performance, I'm seeing it as a bad performance, potentially. which as long as I can see that and then own up to that, and you know, you own those L's, you adjust and you make those kind of judgments and you learn and you carry on. And that's how life works. And so the last question is from Glenn. We love Glenn. He's not had a list for a while. But Martin, are we going up as freaking champions?
Well, I've already answered this one in a recent pod with Salvo.
I think you're with me.
Yeah, was you on it as well? Yeah. So, I still say that we're going up as freaking champions.
except he didn't say frickin'.
Yes. No, I said something different that day. We'll keep it a bit more PG in this game. I had dropped enough F-bombs in that episode, so we'll keep it more PG
in this one.
Yeah. But no, I think really the momentum is on our side at the moment, and Leicester do seem to be having something of a head loss at the moment. Maybe just another game.
They're just regressing to the mean.
Yeah, there is that as well. So yeah, I think it's a bit silly his choice of words before the game where we beat them. Now we're just another game thing that he said.
I bet he's regretting
that roundabout now.
I think on the wider picture, this weekend was pretty massive with regards to the whole promotion and title race now, which we didn't think was going to be a race, let's be honest. You know, the Ipswich result, which was lovely to see them have their sort of wins turned against them.
And then
obviously we knew that Hull away was going to be a tough one, which is why Adam is worried about the whole game, but that's at home, so it's kind of like not as much of a worry maybe. But yeah, I'm going to say, ask me in the international break this question before I give a more definitive answer. A proper cop-out, I know. But that's everything, because we are running out of time, and it's been a pretty long one for yous. So we'll just do a quick reminder of how you can get our ad-free podcasts by going to our Patreon, and then you can also join the Discord, and you can learn about The Gangster's Steak and Cheese, Glenn's Lists, and so that's at patreon.com/ASAW Patreon. As I said, that's everything tonight. We'll be back very soon with the Millwall preview, and then we will review that, and then it's an international break where we might have a bonus podcast if you sign up to the Patreon. But if you don't, you won't get it. But for now, all I'll say is thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Tom.
And thank you, dear listeners. Have a great week. Havashti.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.